This 4th of July, as we go about our activities with family and friends, we should all take some time to reflect upon the true significance of the holiday. Yes, it's a celebration of our country's Declaration of Independence from Great Britain, but it is much more than that. It's a celebration of an idea that was revolutionary then, and unfortunately is still considered revolutionary by many today. The Declaration of Independence boldly states, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and institute a new government." This revolutionary declaration is the foundation of American political thought and has inspired millions around the world for the 235 years since Thomas Jefferson wrote it. The common view at the time was that rights were granted by the government to the people. Instead, Jefferson declared there is a higher law, unalienable rights, that every human has by their mere existence. Government only has those powers granted to it by the people to protect these natural rights. Unfortunately today, it seems that many have rejected Jefferson's declaration and have returned to the antiquated idea of government supremacy. They define patriotism as supporting the government. Most disheartening of all are the discussions about the Constitution. Political commentators, major party politicians, and Supreme Court nominees talk about our constitutional rights as if the government were granting us our rights through the Constitution. Nothing could be farther from the truth. In the Constitution, the founders again made it abundantly clear that all power comes from the people. The Constitution is a document where people have granted the government certain limited powers. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Benjamin Franklin said, "They that can give up essential liberty to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety." The author of this thoughtful, powerfully written piece, Mr. Jim Ronstadt, suggests that we take a moment this 4th of July from our celebrations that we might reflect on the founders' vision for America and how, if I might add, we ever let it get so far astray.
From behind the Second Amendment Iron Curtain, in the shadows of the New York City skyline, this is Gun for Hire Radio, the voice of 1 million New Jersey gun owners, with your hosts, Sandy Berardi and Master Firearms Trainer, Anthony Calandra.
The weekly gathering place for over 1 million freedom-loving gun owners, the most listened to Second Amendment broadcast in the nation. Welcome to it.
Guess what?
What?
Dan Schmutter's back.
Dan Schmutter is back.
From Hartman and Winicky.
Every time we have Dan Schmutter on, our ratings go through the ceiling.
Well, here's the deal. Before Dan says a word, the Supreme Court denied hearing the Peruta case, which sent a flurry through the internet, all the blogs, everybody went through it, you know, bearing arms, you know, the guys down at Amoland. So everybody wants to know why and what's going on, even though Thomas wrote some beautiful jewels of wisdom.
Yeah, he really did.
But we wanted Dan here because he's pretty much our expert in this realm. So, Dan, say hello.
Hey, guys.
So it's great to have you here. So basically, Justice Thomas, he called out the Supreme Court for not believing in the Second Amendment, if you read what he wrote. So you want to jump on that?
Yeah, well, this is interesting. This is the second time in the last few years that Thomas has dissented from a denial of certiorari in a Second Amendment case. And one of the things that he says in his opinion, dissenting in the Peruta case, is he points out that there have been no Second Amendment cases taken up by the Supreme Court since the McDonald case in 2010. And he simultaneously points out that during that same time period, since 2010, 35 First Amendment-related cases were heard by the court, and 25 Fourth Amendment-related cases were heard by the court. Wow. It's actually very interesting what he says. I'll read a little bit of a quote here, because he kind of says it in a very interesting way. He says, "The court's decision to deny certiorari in this case reflects a distressing trend, the treatment of the Second Amendment as a disfavored right.
Wow.
The Constitution does not rank certain rights above others, and I do not think this court should impose such a hierarchy by selectively enforcing its preferred rights." Yeah, that's very telling, because one thing we do know from the McDonald case especially, and also the Heller case as well, is that the Second Amendment is on the same level playing field as the other provisions in the Bill of Rights, particularly the First Amendment, and they go out of their way to say that. So the idea that the court is refusing to hear Second Amendment cases is very important, and obviously Justice Thomas thinks that's fairly critical.
Listen, I got plain English response, too, from Thomas, and this came from the Daily Caller, obviously. This is what Thomas wrote, and by the way, Justice Neil Gorsuch agreed with him on this. "For those of us who work in marbled halls, guarded constantly by a vigilant and dedicated police force, the guarantees of the Second Amendment might seem antiquated and insignificant," Thomas wrote, after most members of the court declined to hear the court case. He also wrote, "But the framers made a clear choice. They reserved to all Americans the right to bear arms for self-defense. I do not think we should stand by idly while a state denies its citizens that right, particularly when their very lives may depend on it." Thomas, he's my bestie.
Yeah.
Scalia used to be my favorite. Thomas is my favorite. I mean, this is unbelievable. And So what's the future of something like this now, Dan? With Peruta gone, could it somehow maybe be a New Jersey case that can get up there? Like, you know, Ginsburg is going to be 143 this year, right? And there's rumors that Kennedy might retire. You know, if Trump gets one or two more, talk to us. Everybody's down in the dumps for Peruta. Is there some light at the end of our tunnel for us serfs?
Okay, so think about it a couple of different ways. First, remember now, when Scalia was alive, we didn't see any cert grants because, remember, we had the Drake case, we had the Kachowski case, that was the Carey case in New York, we had the Woolard case, that was the Carey case in Maryland, and we weren't seeing the court take up these cases. When Gorsuch was nominated and confirmed, the best we could hope for, as far as the math, was that Gorsuch would be as good as Scalia on the Second Amendment. So now that we now have some clue as to where Gorsuch is, because Gorsuch joined in Thomas's dissenting opinion in the Peruta case. So we now see that the expectation that Gorsuch would be favorable was probably a very good bet.
But that's good news.
But the math hasn't changed, right? So at this point, there's no good reason to believe that we're going to see the court taking these cases until there are some, at least one or perhaps two more justices that have a strong favorable inclination towards the Second Amendment. Now, what's coming down the pike? We have the D.C. cases, and I know we've talked about this in the past, but there are two cases, one called Grace and one called Wren, both challenges to the D.C. Handgun permit scheme, which is very similar to New Jersey.
It's handgun a very scheme.
It's a very restrictive regulatory.
What state is it from?
This is D.C., District of Columbia.
So D.C., California, New Jersey, same thing. Go ahead.
Effectively, yeah. And so these cases were both argued, I think, last fall before the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, and we're waiting for a decision. So that's likely to be the next case that the court might see.
I want to talk more about that. Sherry just popped into the studio. Say hi, Sherry.
Hi. Tell you about my friend Katie. Katie is a nurse and she was attacked on her way home from work. She was totally taken by surprise, and although Katie is only 5 feet tall and 106 pounds, she was easily able to drop her 6'4", 250 pound attacker to his knees and get away unharmed. Katie wasn't just lucky that day, she was prepared. In her pocketbook, a harmless looking lipstick, which really contained a powerful man-stopping aerosol propellant. It's not like it was in our grandmother's day. Today, just going to and from work or to the mall can have tragic consequences. The FBI says a violent crime is committed every 15 seconds in the United States, and a forcible rape happens every 5 minutes. And chances are, when something happens, no one will be around to help. It looks just like a lipstick, so no one will suspect a thing, which is important since experts say getting the jump on your attacker is all about the element of surprise. Inside this innocent-looking lipstick is the same powerful stuff used by police and the military to disarm even the most powerful armed aggressor. In fact, National Park Rangers use the very same formula that's inside this little lipstick to stop 2,000-pound vicious grizzly bears dead in their tracks. It's like carrying a personal bodyguard with you, in your purse or your pocket. Darkness brings danger. Muggers and rapists use darkness to their advantage. We all know what it's like to be walking at night and hear footsteps coming at us from behind. Who's there? If it's somebody bad, will you be protected? Your life may depend on it. My friend Katie's close call needs to be a wake-up call for all of us, myself included. Pick up a lipstick bodyguard and keep it with you always.
The world's becoming a dangerous place for us women. Lipstick Bodyguard looks just like an innocent little lipstick, but it'll instantly drop any attacker to his knees so you can get away unharmed.
And what better way to say I love you than giving the ones you love a gift to keep them safe? Lipstick Bodyguard. It looks just like a beautiful little lipstick, but just like a beautiful woman, it has the power to bring a grown man to his knees.
Lipstick Bodyguard, fear no evil. Get yours today, only at lipstickbodyguard.com.
Just follow the link on the gunforhireradio.com homepage.
No rules, no apologies, no holding back. Gun for Hire Radio, the most listened to Second Amendment broadcast in the nation. 4 years running.
This segment is brought to you by GunSitters. GunSitters.com is located on Route 10 East in Whippany in the Pine Plaza Mall. GunSitters can help you out in storing your guns. They can also appraise your firearms for insurance purposes or if you're going through a marital problem. Great place to store your guns. Some people in the studio have used GunSitters and their services before for various reasons. Actually, 50% of the occupants of the studio have used GunSitters because of the state we live in. So GunSitters.com, check them out. Don't let the prosecutor's office grab your guns. Dan can tell you what it's like to get them back once they're seized. And if you're in the military or know someone, their military division, Weapons Guard, will hold your firearms for you while you're being transferred or deployed for free.
Very nice.
So gunsitters.com. By the way, newsflash, sparklers and party poppers are now legal in New Jersey.
Hey!
But you can't release a balloon into the open air. It's a $500 fine. It's a give and take in New Jersey, ladies and gentlemen.
Sort of
it's a give and take,
yes,
okay?
We can't have too much freedom all at once.
So Sherry's on the show. Sherry, you can chime in anytime you want. The last two segments are all yours. We're ejecting Dan after that. But the Peruta case and cases that are coming forward are important to us because we are so frustrated in this state. And, you know, so Dan, continue with this case you were talking about out of D.C. How has it helped me? How does it help us serfs in New Jersey? Because I'm happy right now. I'm sitting here. I'm lighting a sparkler, so I really don't care that I don't have Second Amendment rights. I have sparkler rights now.
I got dibs on those party poppers.
Well, the D.C. cases are very similar to Drake in that they are straight-up challenges to comprehensively restrictive regulatory approaches. They're actually more like New Jersey than California. If you recall, California has the concept of good cause to obtain a permit, but good cause is not defined statewide. It's left to individual county sheriffs to determine what good cause means. So California is one of those states, kind of like New York, where depending upon where you live, you might be completely restricted from having a permit, or you might be able to get a permit depending upon the circumstances. D.C. is like New Jersey, where it doesn't matter where you live or who you apply to, the likelihood of you getting a permit is close to zero. So it's actually very similar to what we have here in New Jersey.
So maybe better for us.
Well, it may actually present the issue in a cleaner way. Remember that Peruta, the en banc panel, that is the full court that heard the case after the three-judge panel heard the case, decided the case in a very strange way. They really didn't decide the case that was before them. Even though the challenge was to the overall restrictive regulatory scheme, the en banc court, that is the full court, decided to only to consider it as a concealed carry challenge, that is, challenge only to the right to concealed carry, and that complicates the issue and made it easier for them to sidestep what was really at stake. So the D.C. cases, Grace and Wren, actually presented in a much cleaner way. And again, we won't know what the numbers will look like. When those cases eventually make their way on a petition for certiorari to the Supreme Court, we don't know what the court's going to look like, and that will matter a lot.
So it's Grace and Wren.
Yes. Something very interesting, by the way, I wanted to comment on. You know, we don't often get information that's useful from a denial of certiorari because they don't generally tell you why they deny the petition. In this case, in Peruta, we have this really interesting dissent from Thomas, which is joined by Gorsuch, but it's not the first time we've seen this on a Second Amendment case. Just a couple of years ago, in a case called Friedman versus Highland Park, another Second Amendment case, this was a challenge to a municipal ban on assault weapons. It also went to the Supreme Court on a petition for certiorari. The petition was also denied, and Thomas also submitted a dissenting opinion from the denial of cert. This time, it was joined by Scalia. But in both of these opinions in the last 2 years, we're seeing a very interesting discussion of the Second Amendment by Justice Thomas in a case where they don't actually hear the merits of the case, which is fascinating, because you don't usually get that. And what we're seeing from these two decisions, from these two opinions, rather, in Friedman and in Peruta, is Thomas may very well be the justice on the court with the strongest favorable view of the Second Amendment. The kinds of things he says in both Friedman and in Peruta are extremely broad and extremely favorable to people who favor the Second Amendment. So it's actually a very, very revealing and very interesting, since Thomas didn't write the Heller decision and Thomas didn't write the McDonald decision. And normally you only get a sense of where a justice is when they author an opinion. Now, of course, when just the author of the opinion isn't necessarily expressing only their own views, because, as you know, you need five votes, so the opinion has to at least reflect what the majority thinks of the case. But you can tend to get a sense of what a particular justice is thinking by the way they write it and how they write it. We haven't had a chance to see that in any majority opinion by Thomas, but these dissents are very revealing about his views, and they're very, very strong from the Second Amendment perspective.
Well,
do you think there hasn't been a history because Thomas kind of took a back seat to Scalia on this, and now that Scalia is gone, Thomas feels like he steps up and can voice his opinion?
You mean specifically on the Second Amendment?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't work that way. The way it's determined who writes the opinion, if the Chief Justice is in the majority, the Chief Justice assigns the opinion to whichever justice he wants.
Oh, I see.
So the reason Scalia wrote Heller is because Chief Justice Roberts assigned it to him. The reason Alito wrote McDonald is because Chief Justice Roberts assigned it to him. That's how it works.
Oh, okay.
So this isn't Justice Thomas voluntarily taking a back seat to Scalia on the Second Amendment. It's simply how the procedures of the court work. If there is another case, we may see Thomas authoring an opinion. I mean, we just don't know. That's really the internal workings of the court and how they make the determination. Particularly when the Chief Justice is able to make that decision when he's in the majority, he gets to make that choice.
Interesting. So this case looks good. What else? What other cases would you say are out there? New Jersey, we don't have a case right now, right?
We don't have a case. There certainly could be a case. You know, one of the things that we've seen, particularly in right to carry, but also on other Second Amendment issues as well, because, you know, although here in New Jersey we focus very heavily on carry because we're denied the right to carry, there have been a lot of other important Second Amendment issues that have had, you know, different levels of success. There's been a lot of success in the Seventh Circuit, you know, which covers Illinois and that area in the Midwest, in the Ezell case, in, you know, Moore versus Madigan. There's been a great deal of litigation going on over there, which has been very successful. There's been other litigation in other parts of the country on various issues. There's the Colby case in the Fourth Circuit that deals with the Maryland assault weapon law. That has been back and forth. There was success initially on that, and then there was, again, an en banc ruling which pulled that back. So there's a lot of stuff going on various fronts. You know, we focus here in New Jersey on carry because it's so important here in New Jersey because it's one of the key things that were denied here. So I expect that we will probably want to see some more. There might perhaps be some more cases following up the D.C. cases. Again, that's an important strategic issue that folks have to think about, because the pipeline, you want the pipeline to be feeding cases to the court at the right time. And since you never know what the court's going to look like at a given time, we don't know, for example, when the D.C. cases make it to the court, what the court composition will be. So, you know, it's not unreasonable to expect that there might be some other cases coming down the pipeline, and maybe one of them will come out of New Jersey.
So this, in a sense, from what I get from you, Dan, is that this is kind of a positive. It's really not all negative here because, like you said before, this is pretty much the same court, in a sense, that we had before. And the rulings on the Second Amendment really weren't that favorable to people who were for the Second Amendment.
Well, what we're seeing, what's nice about this dissenting opinion is we now have a sense of, at least some sense of Gorsuch and where he is on these issues, because the Peruta opinion by Thomas is very strong on the breadth of Heller and what it means for the right of self-defense. Thomas takes this essentially the same approach that the majority opinion in McDonald does by focusing on, and he actually uses the word court, which is very important because the courts that have been limiting the Second Amendment below in the lower courts have been trying to call the core of the Second Amendment the right of self-defense in the home, which, as we know, is not accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas takes the broad approach, which is calls the core of the Second Amendment the right of self-defense generally.
Generally, period.
And what that does is it takes the Second Amendment out of isolation in the home, mm-hmm. and it reflects the reality that people need to defend themselves everywhere. And it even reflects the Seventh Circuit said in the Moore case, which is that you're actually more likely to require the right of self-defense outside the home because you're more likely to encounter a violent criminal outside the home.
Right.
So Thomas's opinion in Peruta really reflects a very, very strong concept of the Second Amendment, and it's interesting to see that, especially, you know, given what we're hoping can happen going forward.
Ginsburg and Kennedy, if they were to retire under Trump's first term and we can get a Supreme Court case, holy shit. Am I right, Dan?
Well, perhaps. I mean, it depends. You know, we don't know who's going to nominate next. You know, so if there's a retirement.
Have the nuclear option now. It's 51 votes to nominate a Supreme
Don't forget,
Court justice.
The president has to nominate someone who is going to have a favorable view of a broad Second Amendment.
But here's the problem. What I feel with Trump was a liberal. And the more the liberals attack him, the further the right they pushed him. He's so far right now, he makes Attila the Hun look like, Susan Allred.
But then you've got Congress. Look, I mean, they did an immediate job of repealing Obamacare.
I don't even want to talk about that. But thank you, Doctor.
You're welcome.
For many people, walking into a range the first time, it's quite intimidating. So when you walk in through the double doors, the first thing you'll see on your left is a concierge. When people walk in, they can take a tour of the range, or maybe they're coming in for an appointment with one of my instructors or me, and they'll be directed to the right classroom. It kind of softens the entire experience. It makes people feel more at home. As you walk further into the range, you're going to notice we have New Jersey's only indoor 50-yard range, which is heated and air-conditioned. The dividers in each port are bulletproof. They're extra-wide ports so two people can stand side-by-side and shoot. There's lights in the ports, so you're well-lit. We also have three times as much light downrange that the average range would have, because I believe it's important that the targets are well lit. Our target retrieval system is all digital. You program how many feet you want to send it out, and it stays there. Both of our ranges are tactically baffled, which means when we run our higher level courses, you can move forward to the firing line and shoot in any direction, and bullets can't escape. When you come out of the 50-yard range, to your left you'll see our large classroom, and go back up to the concierge and make a right, we have two smaller classrooms. And those classrooms are for small one-on-one classes, our Build-A-Bear, building an AR. As you enter through there, you'll see that we have a portal with a key to go into our Platinum Lounge. They can sit around and watch TV on the leather chairs or couches, and they can maybe work deals with their clients. And you normally don't see a cafe in an indoor range. In New Jersey, we have this archaic law where you're only supposed to go from your house to the range to the house, with no unnecessary deviations. I'm seeing a lot more families coming in now where they have multiple kids, and the wife will stay in the cafe with one or two kids, and they'll do a handoff. To me, it's very important that people are treated like family, so the bathrooms are very high-end. We use marble and Corian and really nice tile and full-length dividers so that people are comfortable when they come in. When you exit the bathroom, you'll see the Gun for Hire radio studio where Sandy and I tape our show. After you pass that and you make a left, you'll notice our retail area. Over 120 firearms for rent. As you turn 180 degrees, you see the large sections of bulletproof glass. That's our 25-yard range. And inside our 25-yard range, we have 13 ports. Those ports are even wider than the 50-yard range. Both ranges have full-time range safety officers. In case you have any questions or concerns, they're there to help you.
Broadcasting truth from behind the Second Amendment Iron Curtain. You're listening to Gun for Hire Radio, the most listened to Second Amendment broadcast in the nation.
And this segment is brought to you by Liberty Office Suites at libertyofficesuites.com. Ron Sousa has two locations, one in Montville and one in Parsippany. For as little as $58 a month, you can have a professional environment. They hold seminars up to 70 people, meeting rooms, mail receiving, answering machine. You can look professional. Take your business to the next level with Liberty Office Suites, please. So, Dan, continue. Sherry's quiet. She's over there. She's got a lollipop, a Tootsie Pop.
She's very happy.
She's being quiet. They're welcome. This is her. Well, she always complains every time she comes. She's going to get chocolate or something with the Saw Group. So, Dan, hit it, please.
I just want to connect one more dot, which I find interesting, which is the stun gun case from last year, Catano versus Massachusetts. You may recall that, and this is technically a Second Amendment case, but the reason we don't talk about it as a Second Amendment case that the court has taken up to hear is because they didn't actually hear it on the merits. They did what's called a GVR, an abbreviation for grant, vacate, and remand. What they basically did was, just to remind your listeners, this was the challenge to Massachusetts' ban on stun guns. And what the court basically did was they basically, in a summary disposition, they didn't hear oral argument, they didn't have briefing, they basically just said, you know what, Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court, you screwed this up. You decided the case in a way that's completely contrary to Heller. Just go back and do it again. Fix it.
Wow.
And what that does is it doesn't deal with the merits of the case. They don't decide the merits of the constitutionality of the statute. They're simply saying to the court, look, we have this petition in front of us. It's obvious that you did this the wrong way. Fix it. Okay, and so what you have in that case, which is interesting, is you have a concurring opinion by Justice Alito. Now, remember, Justice Alito is the author of the McDonald decision. And Justice Alito, in his decision, says, because, you know, the court, the actual, the Supreme, the court itself only issued a 1.5-page opinion. Because, as I said, when they do a GVR, they're basically just saying, go back and fix this. We're not going to deal with this. You did it wrong. Fix it. Alito, on the other hand, wrote a concurring opinion, a full-blown concurring opinion, in which he argues that the statute should have just been voided as unconstitutional. He goes through a long, detailed analysis. Now, it's not, since this wasn't a denial of cert, they actually grant cert, but they don't actually hear it on the merits, it's not a dissent, it's a concurrence, because he agrees with the result from the court. But he, like Thomas, he's clearly of the view that the court should be hearing this and perhaps other Second Amendment cases on their merits, reversing and vacating and striking down laws that violate the Second Amendment and should be establishing the scope of the Second Amendment to a greater extent. So while it's not a dissent from a denialist cert like Thomas's opinions in Friedman and Peruta, it's another insight into how a justice on the court thinks about the Second Amendment, its scope, and its breadth.
Wow.
So when you think about these three opinions, these three non-majority opinions, you get a very good, interesting picture about how some of these justices are thinking about what the court ought to be doing with the Second Amendment. It's fascinating.
Wow. You know, I want to really reach – Jan's going to talk about knife fights, but Dan, you're so crucial coming on this show. Dan Schmutter is an attorney. It's not just civil rights and gun cases his firm handles. It's Hartman and Winicki, and they're in Ridgewood, New Jersey. Dan is also active on social media. He's on the Gun for Hire page. He's also a friend of mine on Facebook. And people will post stuff like, why is this happening or whatever, and Dan will weigh in on it with his opinion or his knowledge on it. And it's priceless, and I can't thank you enough for what you do for us in the state of New Jersey. I just want to put that out there. And, you know, when we're off air, I bust chops all the time, but that's coming from my heart that, you know, you're one of the guys doing the heavy lifting from the legal aspect in the state of New Jersey to try to get us our rights back. You know, Dan lives in New Jersey, Essex County, right?
Yeah.
Lives in New Jersey. His daughter goes to school here. He's married. He practices law here. So he's fighting for us for all the right reasons, too. It's not like he's just doing it, you know, because he's getting paid $50,000 an hour. By the way, Alan Gura told me he loved me on a Facebook tweet, by the way. I'm expecting that from you soon.
Absolutely. I can't, you know, if Alan says it, I have
yes,
to say it too.
Alan Gura says
he
love you. I said bravo on a case he just handled, and he said, love you, man. So, and I screenshot it, by the way. So, Dan, let's talk about knife rights.
Yeah, actually, before I get to that, it's interesting that you mentioned that. Alan actually had a nice cert denial in the Binderup
yes,
case.
Yes, that's what I tweeted about.
The Binderup case actually has been sort of overshadowed by Peruta. They were both disposed of at the same time in the same conference. Binderup was a nice result out of the Third Circuit, which is our circuit here that governs New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, and the Virgin Islands. And in that case, the plaintiffs were successful in establishing that you can, if you are would otherwise be a prohibited person as a felon, you can go to court and establish that you're different in important ways from the person who's traditionally prohibited from possessing firearms, and you can establish that you should not be a prohibited person, which is very important because it's a way of getting out from under the felon prohibition if you can establish the right facts. That's actually important victory. There was a victory in the Third Circuit, and the government tried to have the Supreme Court to hear it, and it was sort of denied. So good job.
If you don't know who Alan Gura is, just Google him, and Heller and McDonald might come up, and victories
it
attached
might.
To them
yeah,
might come up. He was on Gunfire Radio about 4 years ago, five years ago. So Dan, I'm a member of Knife Rights, a life member. KnifeRights.com. I just won a knife from Knife Rights. It's coming today, FedEx, by the way, as we're taping the show. I won a Hogue Damascus Blade knife because they have their fundraiser raffle every year at NRA convention and at the Knife Rights, at the Blade show. And also at SHOT Show. So I bought some tickets, and I got an email from Doug Ritter that I won. I'm getting a Hogue Damascus limited edition knife or something. So, Dan, talk about the Knife Rights case. By the way, I'm not a big fan of Cyrus Vance, by the way. Go ahead.
Neither is the New York legislature, apparently, because they voted overwhelmingly to change the gravity knife law, and it's now going to be up to Governor Cuomo to determine whether to sign it or not. He vetoed it last year, and we'll see what he does now. But as your listeners know, we've been fighting against the city of New York and Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance on the way they apply New York's gravity knife law to arrest ordinary people for carrying ordinary pocket knives. And as you know, the way New York City and the DA have this very odd and unusual interpretation of the gravity knife law. They will arrest and prosecute you if they can take an ordinary folding pocket knife and flick it open with their wrist.
And I can open some any knife like that.
And this is not done anywhere else in New York State, and it's not done anywhere else in the country. So this is a very unusual and unique way of enforcing the law. And what it ends up happening is thousands of people, ordinary folks with ordinary pocket knives, are getting arrested each year. And it's just a horrific, horrific thing. So we've been fighting this now for a number of years. We were dismissed out of court in federal court in New York on a procedural ground several years ago. We went up to the Second Circuit and got a reversal. We were successful there. So we went back down to try the case last year. We tried the case. and we got an unfavorable decision again from the district court. So now we're back up on appeal with the United States Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit. So we filed our brief this month, and we're now waiting for the government to file their briefs. But what I think is interesting, and one of the things I could talk about, is we have two very, very strong amicus curiae briefs. Amicus curiae means friend of the court. And as some of your listeners may know, who follow...
You've written some of those for the Supreme Court.
Correct. And what an amicus curiae, what a friend of the court brief does, is it brings to the court's attention issues or arguments that the parties themselves may not be arguing. And the reason for that may be that a particular organization may have a particular perspective on this. So, for example, Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership, you had them on last week. They file amicus briefs because they want to bring the physicians and the medical perspective on some of these issues. In the past, I've represented Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, and we submitted amicus briefs to the Supreme Court in Heller and McDonald to bring a certain perspective to the case the parties may not be focusing on, because the parties are focusing on the particular issues that they're arguing. So we have two very, very strong amicus briefs that have been filed with the Second Circuit in support of our appeal. One of them is a brief on behalf of 17 law professors. Leading the charge there is a professor at Yale named Gideon Yaffe. And the concept here is the concept in criminal law called mens rea. For your listeners who are not familiar with it, mens rea has to do with the intent that a person has to have to be found guilty of a criminal violation. And Professor Yaffe is one of the leading experts in the country on mens rea, and he and the professors that have joined him are making the argument that in addition to the vagueness problem that we argue, there's also a major problem with the statute because it does not have a mens rea requirement.
We can pick this up right after the break.
Yeah, and then Chevy's got to come on because she's looking angry.
Is she? Yeah, well, she's sucking on the pump.
Everything I do gonna be funky from now on.
Time and memories. The two most precious things you can give someone. No cell phones, no video games, no electronic devices. No interruptions. Just your favorite gun, a couple boxes of ammo, and time spent together. The folks at Gun for Hire Woodland Park Range believe there's no time like the present, and no present like time. Step through their doors, and you'll feel time stand still. It may look like a luxury shooting range, but what they really sell is the perfect day, and perfect memories are made from perfect days. Gun for Hire Woodland Park Range, where family memories begin.
And this segment is brought to you by County Line Firearms, which is interesting because Sherry works there part-time. County Line Firearms, NJ.com, is on Route 10 East in East Hanover, across the street from the Best Buy. They have their own sign and everything. Carlos Negron runs the joint, and Sherry is his right hand. I can say that, right? Yes. So check out County Line Firearms, NJ.com. So, Dan, got to finish up with this.
Before Dan finishes, at the end of the show, we want to know how many licks of a Tootsie Pop Pop before...
It used to be three.
It's still three.
Okay. It's still three? Okay.
Well, because you can just test it. You know, one,
two,
three. Yes.
I love it.
The science has been established. Okay, go ahead.
So just picking up on the amicus brief. What's interesting is that, as you know, our argument is that the law is unconstitutionally vague because there's no way for a prison to know whether they've got a knife that will be flicked open by some police officer down the road, because that's what determines liability is if someone else can flick the knife open, not if you can flick the knife open. So what these professors are saying, it's actually even worse than that. A criminal law of this type usually requires that you know that you're violating the law. That's where the mens rea comes from. You have to have a certain amount of knowledge. They're saying that not only is a problem with vagueness, but it's even worse that constitutionally there's a lack of due process because you don't even have to know that you're violating the law to be convicted of a crime here. So it's a really horrific situation, and they present a very interesting background on criminal law and due process. This brief was written by an attorney named Doug Garou at a firm called Hunt and Williams in in Richmond, Virginia, a really, really fine brief. So we're very happy to have the assistance of this brief. The second brief was a brief written by the Legal Aid Society in New York, and they argue that this law is really just a pretext for basically just prosecuting undesirables, people that they just don't like. And it's sort
stop
of
stop and frisk, kind of,
exactly.
And profiling.
They analogize it to the old vagrancy laws from years ago that were found right. unconstitutional, because that gives them discretion to just, if they don't like you, well, oh, you've got a knife, we're going to arrest you. But we're really arresting you because we just don't like the way you look, or we don't like the way, you know, the way you seem. You know,
locked a Boy Scout up that was going to get an award in the city.
Yeah,
Knife Rights published that, remember?
Right,
he had a knife clipped into his pocket. He was an Eagle Scout on his way to receive an award. He got locked up.
Extraordinary. Yeah, it's pretty horrific. So we're hoping to see what happens with the Court of Appeals, and we're waiting for the government's brief. We'll probably see that, I think we'll see the government's brief in September, and we'll go from there.
You guys need to support Knife Rights, by the way. They're the NRA of gun rights, and Dan Schmutter's firm is Hartman Winicki, hartmanwinicki.com. Dan Schmutter is the man. Dan, you can stick around for this segment at least, and Sherry is here now, who works part-time at County Line Firearms, and Jay, she is also the co-founder extraordinaire of the SAW Group, which has many events and training sessions here at the range. So say hello, Sherry, and take over.
Hello. I do want to talk about SAW and our events and kind of where we are.
Please.
But since Dan is here, I actually do have a question for him, if that's okay. I get a lot of tags on Facebook this time of year about actually pepper spray and pepper spray versus wasp spray. You see that kind of people thinking that they should carry wasp spray or bug spray instead of pepper spray. I'm an OC instructor. I know you are too, Anthony. And I mean, I'm just no. I'm just answering right now, just no. But
it's a good
curious
way to go to jail.
Exactly. So I wanted to ask you, like, what are the legal implications of somebody if they actually would use wasp spray as self-defense? You're talking about intent and all that kind of stuff.
Well, do you mean in terms of what it's composed of or the nature of how they use it? Because those are really two different questions. One has to do with what you're allowed to carry, and the other one has to do with what you're allowed to do in self-defense. The way the law in New Jersey is there's a specific exemption, because as you know, New Jersey law has broad prohibitions on the possession of weapons. We talked a lot about the Kelly case.
Yes.
There's a specific carve-out, a specific exemption for the way they phrase it in the statutes, it's 3/4 of an ounce of a chemical spray of some sort. They don't say pepper spray, they don't say mace, they don't identify the specific substance. I'd have to go look at the statute to get the exact wording, but it's a fairly generic way to describe a small canister of some sort of self-defense spray. I don't know what wasp sprays consists of, or other bug sprays like that.
It's got a neurotoxin in it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Paralyze the wasp,
yeah,
right?
Right. So I don't know whether those would count, you know, as the same way pepper spray might, whether they would be within the carve-out. They certainly might be, based upon the breadth of the statute. I just don't know for sure. I don't know that I would recommend people carry wasp spray, but
you would be surprised how many people are out there. I mean, if you Google pepper spray versus wasp spray, you'll see all kind of videos why not to use it for a lot of other reasons other than legal reasons.
Sure. One thing that would concern me is that I'm guessing that canisters of bug spray or wasp spray are probably larger than the legal limit.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Mike, and again, this is the first time I'm thinking about it. I'm sort of just thinking off the top of my head, but I would be concerned that if you take a can of wasp spray that's larger than 3/4 of an ounce or has more than 3/4 of an ounce of chemical in it, and you carry it around as a weapon, you find yourself in State versus Kelly, where you're carrying a weapon under circumstances not manifestly appropriate for such lawful uses as it may have. So I'd be a little concerned about people carrying around wasp spray for self-defense.
So if you're carrying wasp spray, you better be on your way to a wasp hive.
Exactly.
To use your baseball
analogy. The baseball bat rule, right, exactly. We'll call it the wasp rule.
So as they always say, it's a good choice if someone attacks you while you're in the act of
killing wasps. Yes,
yeah. I would use OC spray for its intended purpose instead of, I wouldn't even trust a big can of wasp spray. Somebody could easily knock it out of your hand.
The fact that being a neurotoxin too is not a real great thing, because you could very well commit manslaughter at that point. Mm-hmm. Where with OC spray,
it's been tested, proven somebody could die from asthma for sure.
But
it's tested to be used on humans.
On humans, yes.
Right.
And bear. And
see, it's good to have a lawyer around.
The statute also may, and again, I don't have it in front of me, but the statute also may say non-lethal spray. as a carve out. So if wasp prey has some sort of neurotoxin in it that could be considered lethal, it also might, for even if it was under the quantity amount, this the 0.75 ounces, it still might not fall within the within the carve out, the exemption. So I'm not a big fan of hearing that people are doing that.
Yeah. Some of the cans may even say on them cannot be used in a manner that it wasn't intended for, and that's why I was thinking about it when you're talking about intent. And if you're already thinking about self-defense and what you're going to use for that, your mind is already in that place, then why go with something
not the like proper we way? Talk about it all the time too. I mean, as instructors, it's the proper tool for the proper job. Mm-hmm. that's not a proper tool. That troubles me that people are using wasp spray.
Just surprising. I mean, I'm preaching to the choir here on your show. All your listeners are, you know, pretty well educated, but the things that
Well, two of them aren't.
You know, it raises another interesting.
Leave my mother out of this.
It raises another interesting question because if you remember, we were talking about the Montalvo case, where the guy had a machete in his home. This would be a great law school question. What happens if you have an intruder in your home and you have wasp spray in your home? Does the Montalvo case make a totally different situation where you have wasp spray in your home and you use that against an intruder versus taking, you know, carrying it on the street with you? I'm a lawyer, so I think of these crazy things. But
can you also be sued by the quote unquote victim, the person who's attacking you, if you spray them with wasp spray in their eyes and it, for example, blinds them? I mean, OC spray really won't.
Sure.
Is not intended for that to happen as a consequence.
Yeah. Well, the interplay between self-defense and tort law is a very important one, and I think you have to be careful about how you. You have to be careful about how you go about self-defense, not just from a criminal perspective, but from a civil liability perspective, right? I mean, there's a certain way the law allows you to engage in lawful self-defense, and you do have to be careful that that's how you engage in lawful self-defense, because once you're outside of what you're allowed to do, there are criminal and civil implications to that. You have to be careful.
That's one of the reasons that cops have to carry a watered-down version of the OC spray, because if you spray someone and they're attacking you, spray someone and they stumble out into traffic and a bus hits them, true, Dan? I mean, you probably have a civil legal issue.
You know, if a lawyer can think of the argument, then you're gonna see it. You're gonna see it in a complaint.
So you're losing your home no matter what. It's just
a lot of people don't really understand that. We talk about that a lot with when you're using your firearm in self defense. That every bullet that comes out of your gun
has
$5,000 and a lawyer attached to it. Right. But you know, I think people when they make suggestions like use wasp spray and other crazy things that they don't really take into consideration. The cost that could potentially happen to them from that.
Right.
When there's something perfectly good they can use.
Right. Litigation and defending yourself against charges is very expensive and very disruptive to your life. So it is important to think about, you know, the implications of your actions.
Don't do it.
So what do you got going on, Sherry?
Summer is somewhat of a slow time for us. A lot of people go way down the shore, but we still do our monthly meetups. And I did write down the dates this time. Our next meetup here in Woodland Park is going to be on July 24th.
What's going on there?
Just our regular meetup where everybody gets together who's around to shoot. You guys open up the range to us for a fantastic price. Only $15 if you're not a member of SAW, and $10 if you are a member to come and shoot. Sometimes you give us the entire 50 yards, so we're in there by ourselves, which is just great. And we get a lot of new people that come to that event. At the last one, we had four or five new shooters who've never fired a gun before. And it's a great opportunity. I mean, I'm an instructor, and we have probably three or four more women who have become instructors over time. So it's just a great environment to kind of, for a really low price, try it out.
It's a wonderful thing you're doing. And when the new edition is done, you're going to be able to host killer events.
We can't wait.
Upstairs, you know, we'll have like the SAW lounge and the women can go up there. And
do I get a private parking spot?
Yes.
Oh, thank
no.
You heard that on the show.
And Dan, like your daughter shoots and, you know, and they're our future, especially women. You know, it's so important. But you are doing great things. And while we're on the subject, what's the website and what's the Facebook contact? Because everybody, what's it, $25 a year?
$25 a year.
You get membership discounts here?
Membership discounts here and at other places in New Jersey.
You can say them
online. I mean, I can't even remember them all. We have them on the website, plus classes that we give. We give a discount for that. And it's just, you know, it's a great
when you
group
come back,
to be part of.
Okay. We'll go over the website and contact info.
Are you still fighting crime the old-fashioned way? Now cut crime in half the time with a fast, easy money-saving solution. Introducing the Shitbaggerator, this year's all-new crime deterrence marvel from the makers of Gun for Hire Radio. The Shitbaggerator's compact design makes it quicker and easier to use than jail cells, parole boards, lethal injections, or those costly, outdated electric chairs. Just park your Shitbaggerator in the town square, open the lid, and drop the shitbag in. It's that simple. There's no wrong way to use it. Back and forth, side to side, round and round, shitbags go in and come out as a mound. Super sharp stainless steel blades that never need sharpening do all the work. Slice shitbags so thin they only have one side. Built strong to last, they slice through even the toughest shitbags. Murderers, rapists, child molesters, no problem. Just set it to high, and the Shitbaggerator's powerful patented motor will handle them three at a time. No muss, no fuss, no bogging down. Just pop the top, drop them in, and watch as the powerful counter-rotating blades pull any size shitbag through at 2 feet per second. Amazing! Cleanup is a breeze. Just rinse with a fire hose or run it through the car wash. There's even a pulse setting for serial offenders. Save up the worst and delight the crowds on the 4th of July. Who needs fireworks when you've got the Shitbaggerator? And it's portable, so you can take it anywhere. But wait, there's more. For a limited time, we'll send you 4 additional sets of special stainless steel blades that never need sharpening. So now you can chop, slice, dice, and cube. The Shitbaggerator and 4 specialty blades, all for the same low, low price. Unbelievable. So don't wait. Call and get yours today.
The Shitbaggerator is available only at Gun for Hire Radio. Operators are standing by.
Okay, before the ladies and legal dream team come back, some housekeeping. Gun for Hire Radio's Twitter, GUN number 4, HYR. SafeCon, September 23rd, SafeCon. It's so funny that Dan is going to be there, Sherry and Saw, they're going to be sharing a booth with Gun for Hire. NJSafeCon.net. You can't believe how many sponsors they're getting now that are non-gun related,
great.
All right? NJSafeCon.net. The State Police Firearms Unit reached out to me yesterday and asked if they could have a booth there answer questions.
Wow.
And their firearms, either sergeant or lieutenant, is going to be making a presentation
fantastic.
Last year.
Oh, that's great.
This is how we win, okay?
Yep.
NJSafeCon.net, September 23rd in Princeton. John, you're doing great things. I have to just tell you that right now. Another thing, the end of July, New Jersey's having another illegal gun buyback in major cities in New Jersey.
Because they're so effective and cost-effective.
Correct. We're going to probably set up booths and buy the guns preemptively before... No, we can't nap in. You can't do that. Dan is like... he got all excited. Then he thought about the being a felon, and I just knocked the wind out of his
right
sail.
Right there. Boom. Yeah.
Yeah. A tremendous response from Dr. Redeen in last week's show. And over the next few weeks, I'll be reading them out. But Christopher Kent, you know, he's a warrior soul. He wrote, if I'm listening to about Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership, he said the doc is great. He told me, though, if your primary care physician is anti-gun, find a new primary care physician.
Yeah, good point.
You know, and he said if they want to make it a public health issue, we'll make it a liability and border violation issue, Chris Kent. I love that,
yeah.
All right? So
yeah.
Doctors, and obviously Dan listened to the show last week as well. We need to work on this stuff. I won't answer the doctor's questions. I'll be like, I would write underneath it, have you ever been punched in the face? You know what I mean? Let the doctor read that.
You don't have kids, but that's also an issue for people with kids.
Pediatrics, right?
I mean, I haven't had that issue with my pediatrician, but, you know, people do get asked that question, and there's the issue also now when kids are becoming teenagers. They're You know, they're having kids come into the rooms by themselves now. They have their own rights to be able to speak privately with doctors, and you don't know what kind of things are being asked.
Like what Dr. Dean said, when you say to the doctor, does your insurance company know that you're practicing outside the scope of your insurance and business?
I wrote an article on that.
You're right. Tail between the legs. The doctor, he goes out to his administrator, take that question off the thing.
Right.
So it's good. So tell us how we can find you and see you and everything.
Our website is sawshootingclub.com, and from there there's links to our public Facebook page, which has events that we're having and different news and information about us, and also to our private Facebook group, which after we know who you are, we'll add you to that, where there's just conversation going on in there. Also, events are posted there, but it's more of a private group. And I just have to say that we've gotten several members over the last, I don't know, I'd say month or so, that have come to me and have said that they've seen the sign that you have right there outside
the
ladies' room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So thank
How
you very
sexist.
Much.
We put the Saw Group sign outside the ladies' room.
You're
it's
got to
piss somebody off, right?
Yeah,
it's got to be an issue with somebody. Someone who's non-binary or
well,
whatever.
Well, we thank you for it. When you have the long lines also on the weekend,
yes.
I guess people are also staying.
We don't have lines. I'm gender fluid.
How are you going to handle that now with there's 92 counting genders? Are you going to have 92 separate bathrooms?
I used to be bisexual. If you bought me food, I'd have sex with you. Then I became trisexual. I'll try anything. Now I'm gender fluid.
Greedy is what
Correct.
That is. That's
just
greed.
If I happen to run into a hot-looking cockroach, I'm
ready
to go.
Pretty much, there it is.
Exactly.
All right, depends on
the world is upside down, ladies and gentlemen. Seriously. I don't care what you do in the privacy of your own home. You know, we talk about this all the time. The range is like Noah's Ark here. We have the Saw Group here. Tony Simon has a diversity shoot. We are going to have Dave Capel here, and we're going to have a second coming out party when the new range is done. Okay, people who've come out of the closet as being alternate lifestyle,
they'll come
and
out, as,
come
gun
out as gun people.
We're I
gonna,
like
Dave
that.
Capel is going to be here for that. So, Sherry, you're doing wonderful things. You know, 40% of our shooters are female, which is phenomenal. When I started doing this in 1992, about 1% were females in this. So,
I've seen a huge change even since I started shooting.
So talk to me.
It's been a huge difference. It's one of the reasons why I wanted to do this in the first place. Is when I started taking classes with you guys, I would come and there were just really no other women there. Like the one time when I always talk about how I met Sandy, I had taken all these classes and then I took a low light class, and right towards the end, she walked in, and I'm like, "Are you here to take this class?" And she was like, "Yeah." So that was, you know, we wanted to make it more comfortable for women to, you know, look, I'm divorced, and I know there's a lot of women that shoot like with their husbands, and they're comfortable because they're coming with somebody else. But when you're single or you're divorced, and you know, I've had people come who are retired law enforcement officers who say that they've had their firearm in their safe, and they just don't feel comfortable practicing by themselves because they're not used to coming into the range. It's very sad.
Yeah.
That's actually, and that's one of the things that I've seen now that we're in our third year that has happened, which I'm so happy about, which is you're coming, you know you're going to be with other people. It's kind of like when you join the gym.
Yes.
And you go there for the first time and you walk out on the floor with all the equipment and you're like, where do I start? And you want that gym buddy to come and to show you where all the equipment is for a while and so that till you feel comfortable showing up and using it yourself. This is kind of like how we are, I think, with the club. A lot of women are so comfortable now showing up here by themselves to shoot where they weren't a while ago. So that's kind of an effect that I didn't really know was going to happen in the beginning.
I see the metamorphosis. I pop into the room when she's having a Saw event, say hello, welcome everybody to the family. You see four or five new faces. Then 3 months later, you see them walking in alone or with their girlfriend or their sister or their husband, and they're just a part of the family. You know, it's funny because you guys fall into that stereotype, but us guys felt the same way when we started. It was intimidating, right, Dan? Yeah. Dan's nodding.
Right.
First time we walked into a gun store or a gun shop, we were scared, too, because, you know, that testosterone thing, the guys are dying behind the counter for you to ask what they perceive as stupid questions so they can go, ha-ha. See, look over here, guys. Look at this idiot. He just asked if a 9mm and a 38 were the same. Ha-ha-ha, jerk or whatever.
Is it easier for you to ask those questions if there's a woman behind the counter or no? I'm just curious because I do get people that come in who are brand new shooters, men, purchasing for the first time. And, you know, when they started, like, get that question out at first, I'm like, there's absolutely no stupid questions, as I learned from you, from classes that I've taken with you.
Thank you. You know, it's funny because I never back in the day, I've never had the position where there was a woman behind the counter.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, it was always a man behind the counter. So, and then by that time, I became so acclimated with guns, it wouldn't matter to me now. Now that I know everything I know about guns, I would prefer to ask the woman behind the counter than
too,
the man.
I think I would, too.
To be honest, I'd want to hear the woman's perspective, because the woman will come out and say, well, my husband did this or my son tried that. You know, where guys like, you want to buy this one. It's the biggest one. This is the biggest one. You'll have the biggest gun at the range in front of all your friends. Yeah, but I was thinking more like maybe a 30. No, this is the biggest one. This is the one you want, you know. So
that's interesting, because I do, you know, offer suggestions and things like that, and it's interesting to hear it from your perspective.
Yeah, it's slightly different. So talk to us some more about the SOAR group. What do you have planned? You're around the state. Where else are you? You can belt it out. Where else have you guys been doing something?
We've done some classes at Garden State Shooting Center, and we hope when there's a range opening up in Legacy, right?
Melissa Dini?
Yes.
Yes.
And she's very excited to have us down there when they finally get started. Thank you.
They're close to Philly, right?
Yeah.
Yes, Sinan and Ensign is close to Philly. Legacy Firearms, good luck to them.
Yes.
That's a wonderful thing.
And, you know, we try to do the gun cleaning classes wherever we can, and the fact that you guys allow us to do that here, it's really one of our most popular events. We do get to do it for no charge, thanks to you and the other people that host that class for
us. You're welcome.
And I know, I'm sure there are men that are new firearms owners that would appreciate something like that too, but I'm glad that I'm able to help offer that for the women in our group, so they learn how to take their own guns apart, clean them, put them back together, become totally comfortable with that, and it's really a very, very popular event.
Wow, you guys are,
I would love to get
you.
My wife to be able to join your group just so she could clean my guns for practice.
True. Don't tell me you don't know how, because you know how.
Yeah, she's Sicilian, so that doesn't work out.
Who cleans your daughter's guns, Dan?
Well, my daughter doesn't own any of her own guns at this moment.
Well, the ones that she shoots
with
you. Okay, you clean them afterwards. Yes. Has she ever been engaged watching you clean them? Has she shown an interest or no?
Not yet, but I really should instruct her in cleaning firearms, because that's something that every gun owner should know.
And it helps you learn what the internals are. So when you have malfunctions or other things that happen, you kind of understand what's happening inside your firearm. You know, it's
very
a good
point.
Good picture for that.
There's probably a lot of guys who don't understand the internals of their firearms, too. That's something that's really important, I think, is just to understand so you can troubleshoot.
Right.
And you know that, you know, this spring might be kind of goofy or whatever.
Right, and your guys who help us, Kevin and Charlie, who help us, they do talk about some of those things while they're helping, you know, the women with their firearms, and it's really great. I mean, we get so many rave reviews from that. People are so happy. I hope we can continue doing it here and in other locations as well.
So how do we find the SOAR group?
SAWshootingclub.com, and from there you can link to our Facebook group and our other social media.
That's it?
That's how you find us.
Okay.
SAWshootingclub@gmail.com.
Okay, and Dan, your firm?
Hartman and Winicky PC in Ridgewood, New Jersey.
You hear that? So we have to support those who support us. I can't thank both of you enough. This time they both reached out to me. Usually I'm asking people, like, you want to... Dan, as soon as the Peruta case wasn't heard, he sent me a message. You want me to come on and talk about it? Yes.
Yeah, you guys are always welcome.
And
here.
I told Sherry that too. Just hit me with dates. Listen, I have more to discuss. I'll hit it with next week's show. Have a great Independence Day, everybody. And also, Masad Ayoub, August 3rd to 6th, there is literally one slot left for Masad Ayoub's class. Sherry, would you recommend that class?
Absolutely. Fantastic class.
And really, Civilian Response to an Active Shooter is June 29th. And Dr. Pirelli is Psychology and Firearms, July 23rd. And then, of course, we have the multi-state CCW going on all over New Jersey and Philadelphia. I want to thank Dan Schmutter from Hartman & Winicky, and I want to thank Sherry Spivak from the SOAR Group for everything they do. And, Sandy, I'd like to thank you, too. I'm feeling jovial today.
You are feeling jovial today. The Psychology and Firearms thing, is that so you can counsel the gun? Because
yes,
we know guns are a problem. I mean, they run out in the middle of the night and murder people.
It has the worst title, and it seems like the most boring class. If you take that class, you'll be like, whoa, I'm so glad I took that class.
Yeah, it really is pretty good.
He's one of our few friends in the firearms community in that subject.
In the mental health side.
Correct.
Absolutely.
So that's it. I am done.
And before we go, one parting thought. Wasp spray? Bad. Use the right tool for the right job. Seriously, people? Wasp spray? When you got Lipstick Bodyguard, it's small, compact, and given your purse and pocket. It's the same stuff that'll stop a grizzly bear in its tracks. And unlike wasp spray, it won't land your ass in jail. Plus, it's cheaper. Find it at lipstickbodyguard.com, right here at the range. And with that, the clock on the wall says it all. You've wasted yet another perfectly good hour listening to Gun for Hire Radio. Gun for Hire Radio is a Counterthink Media production. The music used in this broadcast was managed by Cosmo Music, LLC, New York, New York, and the Licensed Broadcast Music Incorporated. On behalf of the entire production crew here at Gun for Hire Radio, including Winston the dog, that's your cue, buddy, we really do thank you so much for listening. Have a great Independence Day, and at the barbecue, please remind some millennial what it's really all about. See you again next week. Shine.